Well, good morning and welcome to another Radio Fishing. It is January 6, 2014, and I have Robert with me.
Yay!
Oh, boy. Boy, don't we sound like just an enthusiastic pair this morning. You should have heard me trying to do this yesterday by myself. I was like, okay, well, we can go here, go there, you know.
And
I,
you were going solo yesterday.
Yeah, I did a solo one yesterday, and I got to tell you, I suck. I mean, we're talking. Oh, boy, I can tell you what. I seriously believe the crowd really is glad you're back. Yes, there they are. Everybody's cheering. Yes, Frank shouldn't be left alone to play by himself. No. Okay. I like it when the crowd goes away. You know, you get all those people cheering. You know, it's just a wave of the hand, and they go, just stop.
Yeah.
Okay.
You have that amazing ability about yourself.
Yes. About myself, for myself. I'm not sure what myself is doing. So, anyway, I've got coffee. You've got Mountain Dew. A little nicotine. I bet you we can get through this.
Should be able to.
All
flying
right.
Colors, right?
Yeah.
Or colorful in one way or the other.
Oh, boy. All right. Well, we're alive. It's been a pretty busy week here in the store. Lots of stuff. People getting ready. And then Sunday, boy, everybody headed offshore. And, I mean, surprising how many jigs people wanted, how many different rigs, how many different lures to pull. A lot of people going out looking for the king mackerel. I think they're going to be a little disappointed. Because with this cold front, I think a lot of them move south.
Yeah, they move south or way offshore. If you weren't willing to go out 40 plus, it's a little tough.
You know,
inside of 40 miles, you're going to catch an occasional king, but most of them are going to be the smaller guys. You know, you won't get into too many of the, 30-pounders or 40-pounders. You'll be looking at probably like the 6 to 10-pounders.
Well,
which isn't bad by any stretch of the imagination, but it's not going to be consistent numbers. It's just going to be an oddball here and there.
Yeah. It's king mackerel prime temperature, 68 to 72. A lot of guys looking for kings right now, though. I was actually surprised at how much king mackerel stuff we were going through. And good thing is, it's a little bit of practice time because we got, what, today, tomorrow, it's going to be cold. Wednesday, it starts warming up again.
Right.
I think I was...
And the other thing, too, has been interesting with those guys going offshore is the variety of different baits that they are all experimenting with or have their confidence in, but most of it's been more experimenting. It's been kind of neat to see the varieties because some of these guys are saying, well, this is what I used up in the panhandle. This guy's saying this is what I used on the other coast. This guy's saying what it uses in the Keys. You know, they're kind of mixing it up a lot, and it's kind of interesting to see people changing their techniques a little bit, because traditionally kingfish guys, same old, you know, there's like five or six major players that they always pick and choose from, and to see them grabbing oddball stuff.
I gotta tell you, if I was gonna pick one to have, and I'm gonna drag one close to the surface, and I always do, it would definitely be that cedar plug.
Yeah.
Don't know why a chunk of wood catches a lot of fish. It's literally unpainted lead with unpainted wood and a hook in it.
Yep. I mean, and the diversity of the fish that cream that thing. I mean, wahoo, tuna, dolphin, kings, Spanish. I've had a black tip shark last summer when we were out there playing around looking for cudas and kings. I mean, it's amazing.
Yeah.
And a really, really cool trick with all those cedar plugs, because even the unpainted one works phenomenal, but even the painted ones, the inside isn't painted. A good little trick is you can soak them in manhaden. Soak them in the manhaden oil, and they absorb that. So they're always constantly leaving a scent. So even though you might get a short strike, it might turn him to come back and hit it a second time around.
I do that on the painted ones. I don't know if the unpainted ones, I think it's a cedar smell sometimes that actually gets them to pop.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not gonna mess with the unpainted one. I think if you're gonna do that to the painted ones and all that, that's all good. But I got a good unpainted cedar plug. I ain't touching it. That thing works.
Absolutely.
But, okay. Somebody was telling me about a lure that was just knocking the barracuda dead. I mean, just creaming the barracuda. And I can't remember what it is. I don't know why I brought it up, because I'm kind of hoping that maybe somebody had mentioned it to you.
No, just the Cuda tubes are kind of the old faithful, but I mean, I've had a lot of guys getting the the 10s.
Yeah.
You know, staying in that 8 to 10 foot range seems to be working pretty well.
Now, I don't remember what this was. I could have walked over to the wall there and double check it. Once I get, you know, it struck me that this was something different, something I would have never thought of using for Barracuda. So I had to get it out, and now I'll remember to go look and find out. Next time you tune into the show, I'll tell you what that plug is, because I'll remember it eventually. But anyway, we're out in the Gulf of Mexico. We might as well start out there. Let's start off with out deep. I'm going to say somewhere around, let's say 60, 80 feet of water. What are you looking at out there?
Some phenomenal.
Yes, it's a morning for dying on the radio. Go ahead.
Some phenomenal mangrove snapper. Some really good lane snapper and grunts. Even a few nice porgies are being caught out there. And there's been some red grouper, but you're going to have to move out to like that 80 to 100 feet of water to get more consistent numbers.
Well, it's going to be 80 degrees by Thursday.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know what that's going to do, bring the fish in, out, move them back up or down. But how much of an impact do you think 2 days of cold weather is going to have in that Gulf?
Probably not a lot, especially when you're dealing with 100 feet of water. 100 feet of water, you're in its own atmosphere, so it doesn't affect it as greatly as it does in that 50 to 40 feet of water range.
Yeah, the shallower it is, the more affected it is.
Absolutely. You'll get some fish that are constantly moving around anyway looking for new structure because, you know, as well as I do, it's just a barren desert out there, so real estate's at a premium. So it's not unusual as the water temps cool down to have a lot of fish moving around more and more just looking for new places to live. And because that temperature is perfect from that 100 feet to 40 feet, it's about the same. So they follow in closer, looking around for that new habitat. So it's not unusual to get some bigger red grouper to move in closer in the wintertime. But as far as it affecting the temperature out there greatly, probably not going to see a great deal of it. The surface temperature will probably be 3 to 5 degrees cooler than the bottom temperature, but I don't think it'll affect the bottom too much. Mainly the front coming over is really going to affect the pressure.
Right. Now, coming back up and the reef's in that 30 to 50 foot of water, you know, Mary's, Helen's, Boxcars, you know.
Probably pretty much the same animals going on there with the mangrove snapper, and the sheep's head are still out there quite a bit. I mean, the sheep's head are scattered from offshore to inshore, so don't be surprised if you get into those pretty good. There's been a few hogfish being caught out there. A lot of barracudas like you were talking about earlier. Which are just phenomenal fight. They were way underrated, way underappreciated. A lot of guys get upset by them because they bite off their fish that they're catching, like their Spanish or their Kings or Snapper or whatever, but they're still an absolute riot. They acrobat, jump all over the place, and make long, super hard runs.
I got to remember what that lure is, because we could actually thin them out a little bit. Wouldn't hurt.
Yeah. You know?
I know, you're not supposed to, but, you know, well, okay, I got an eco me and I got a, hey, you owe me.
No,
I'm sorry.
But the thing is, like, my biggest problem I have with killing barracuda, number one, is how many hundreds of charters those have saved. How many billions of dollars have been made between the Keys and here when the day's just crappy and you've gone out and just been able to catch barracuda.
Oh, absolutely. You know? No, I'm going to give you that. And under 30 inches, they're very good eating.
Yeah, and around here you don't have to worry so much about ciguatera because we don't have the coral reefs. And
ciguatera is a disease you can get by eating barracuda. It's not treatable. It's kind of like malaria where it just keeps popping up on and off, and you got to put it in a barometric chamber to get rid of it. But it, you can't really get it in a barracuda under 28 inches. It would be very, very, very rare. You probably, about the same chance of you getting hit by lightning.
Yeah, that's super
which,
unusual.
Guess who would probably get it? So, you know, I've only been hit by lightning, what, you know, once major, you know, just unconscious once, you know, so.
Yeah.
You know, the other couple, two, three times, I just got jolted pretty good. I don't know what it is. My magnetic personality, I guess.
Exactly.
Okay, so anyway, Up around, get up towards Venice, in that area.
Venice through down to Inglewood, out along the beaches. The whiting bite has been incredible. There's been some fish up to 2 pounds. Most of them are in the 3/4 of a pound to a pound. But hearing some pretty darn good whiting.
And we got some good black drum reports in the passes. Flounder hitting up there. They've actually got a pretty good flounder bite going on right now.
Yeah.
Been hearing about that in the intercoastal and on the outside, right along the passes. Lemon Bay in particular, what's going on there? I've been hearing a little bit of stories, some Spanish mackerel through the passes. Sheephead actually doing very well in the passes up there. Venice down through Stump Pass, hearing a lot of sheephead stories.
Right. The sheep's head under the in the passes and along all the docks there. Doing really, really well. There's also been some redfish underneath the docks and at the mouths of some of the canals and creeks over there. But the trout bite has been really good mixed in on those open sand flats and around some of the oyster patches along with those sheep's head.
If you go just north of Stump Pass, right where you're going out to the stump, out to the pass, just north on the intercoastal, there's a nice little grass flat there. One of the guys was coming in. They were throwing little johns there, doing very well on trout. Slow, a little heavier jig head, 1/4-3/8, banging the bottom with it and giving it big hops, letting it hit the bottom, big hop, letting it hit the bottom, catching some real nice keeper size, and, I mean, that 20-inch size trout.
Right. Yeah, there's been some better quality fish. I mean, the trout in general haven't been massive numbers, but if you work hard in some of those deeper sand holes, it's been very, very quality fish.
Yeah, it's there's scattered mixed little ones around. There's a lot of different pop and cork here, and you'll catch a lot more trout, but get down and really let that jig hit the bottom, really bounce and push some sand, and you'll see you'll see some bigger trout working through there.
Yeah, there's also been quite a few bluefish mixed in out there too, so don't be surprised if you get banged off every now and then.
Yeah, if you get railed and you get a little bit of frayed up leader, you had some bluefish on. Coming down to Placida, there's still a nice school of redfish in the bay. When you come out from the boat ramp, go to the right. There's a grass flat there with a little bit of deeper water behind it, right in that little bend of the pocket there.
Mm-hmm.
Just on that barn, just on the inside, there's actually some pretty big redfish hanging out right there.
Yeah.
And that school's been pretty consistent, kind of coming and going, but it's been in there the last couple of days. Shrimp, and if you're up on the flat, use your popping cork. And once you get back behind that flat, get into split shots, jig heads, and shrimp, and you'll do real well.
Yeah, I've heard there's been some snook mixed in out there too. You know, a few bigger snook mixed in with that little school.
If you're going to take, and let's go down the passes, Gasparilla, Boca, Captiva, Redfish, Ponderosa, anything going on down the passes?
Well, the backsides of there is doing really, really good. Boca Grande down through Cayo Costa on the snook and the redfish and the trout. The basin going into Boca Grande right now has got quite a few sheep's head, some black drum, a good mixed variety of redfish and snook, and then there's also been quite a few trout on the outside flats there around the Three Sisters, and some nice bonnet heads moving in throughout there. And then the bycatch has been some good bluefish, oddball Spanish mackerel, some occasional flounder in some of those sand holes, and then down around Pelican Bay, on the outside, there's been some really good redfish and snook cruising up and down that shoreline with some mixed in flounder and whiting. Some bigger trout right at the entrance on the north side and the south side of Pelican Bay.
I used to like going into Pelican Bay, and you had that overnight anchorage, all the sailboats anchor up there, but I used to go in. Sorry, guys, but go in and right on the right side, just pull up on the beach, and boy, there's so many ladyfish, trout, snappers, there's cowfish, there's all kinds of exotics out there. What a just a real fun place to just pull up the boat and
right.
Catch a whole bunch of weird fish.
Right.
I wouldn't say it would be, if I wanted to go get dinner, that's probably not the spot, but if I wanted to go just catch a weird variety of puffers and cowfish and, I mean, just name
Lizardfish.
Lizardfish. Everything seems to hang right out there in that entrance to Pelican Bay on that north end of it.
Yeah, that grass flat is so healthy right there on that north side, on that back side of the island there. That little island just to the left of the north entrance. Mm-hmm. That whole back side, that grass is some of the healthiest, most beautiful grass I think I've ever seen around the harbor.
Well, it stays pretty clear out there, and one of the reasons we don't have a lot of grass up in the upper harbor is the color of the water. Grass needs sunlight. No sunlight, no photosynthesis, it doesn't grow.
But even comparing it to like down in the Sound and even along the intercoastal where it's pretty clear and clean, that grass there is just something about it. It's pretty stunning. I like it. It's a beautiful little area, and I think that's why you have
some
of those.
You got pretty grass there, buddy.
Right?
Yeah, you got some pretty grass.
Okay. You know, and Boca Grande Pass right now has been very inconsistent the last 5 or 6 days, and I think that's because the water temperature is starting to drop down a little bit. But there are still a lot of really, really nice mangrove snapper in there. Same way with down in Captiva Pass, some very good quality mangrove snapper down in there. And then if you fish along the outside edge of Captiva Pass, there's been some pompano, some flounder, some pretty good whiting, especially up by those blowdown trees on the very south end of KO.
Going down to redfish, some nice, not a lot of snook, but a lot of more redfish than snook, but there are some snook there.
Mm-hmm.
And hearing good reports of sheephead in Redfish Pass itself.
Yeah.
I think they're kind of doing it the way they do the snook, where they're just drifting that south end of the pass. I've been hearing some nice sheephead reports from down there.
That seems to be one of the more consistent things along the whole intercoastal is the sheep's head in general and all sorts of different spots, not just the passes, but some of those deeper sand holes in the Sound. Those 8 and 10 foot holes in there have been holding some very, very nice sheep's head. Problem is you're fighting the little baby jacks and the little baby blue runners and some very small trout in the process. But if you take your time and you're patient with it and just work each sand hole fairly meticulously, especially along the edges of it where it starts to drop off, that seems to be where those sheep's head are at. The same way with over there at the Captiva Rocks. And then all the bomb holes or whatever they're called down there have been holding some good trout and sheep's head in them too with some good bonnet heads.
And that's a reference going back to World War II. There was an Air Force base here in Punta Gorda. And the flyers used to go along and actually they used to sight in their guns and do practice with manatees, but they also used to bomb along through there, practicing their bomb runs in different areas out here. And it was actually quite the thing, you know, going back to the late 30s, early 40s. And so actually, you know, bomb holes is actually probably fairly accurate.
Right. I mean, I've heard of that. I just didn't know the whole story. I knew about the old military base in Punta Gorda, but wasn't familiar with how all that worked. I heard it was just old ammunition that they were trying to dispose of, but practicing makes a heck of a lot more sense.
Well, it was probably a little
especially back in that time, because, I mean, the intercoastal was being made or had been just recently made, right? Am I fairly...
I really don't know. I got to look that up. I used to know when the intercoastal was put in, but...
Still within probably 30 years of that, or 20 years of that.
Everything right around there, but
all the World War going on and all that crap. So
well, there's a lot of German subs out here in the Gulf. I mean, people, you don't hear the movies and the stories like you do in the Atlantic, but the reality was we had a lot of German U-boats here in the Gulf of Mexico, a lot of ships sunk, and there's a lot of submarines still out here in the Gulf. They're rusted up, they're falling apart, but still a lot of U-boats, people use them for fishing reefs now, but we have a lot of them out here in the Gulf. And if you go down around and Punta Rasa, I know there's sheephead around those bridges, but I haven't really heard a whole lot else. There should be some small sharks, but I'm thinking with this cold weather and that shallow water, I think they're going to move south.
Definitely.
Let's go down and see what, you know, Duval Street looks like for a while. See if any of the tourists will fall off the end of the road.
See what other land sharks are down there. Punta Rasa, Matlachet area, haven't heard a whole lot this past week. And I know that there's been some quality trout and some sheep's head down there. But I think most of the guys have been looking. I think a lot of people have actually been taking what we said the last couple weeks about, you know, Lewis and Clark, and go out and look around a lot and move a lot. And I think that's why we're hearing so many different scattered reports from everybody, because there's a lot more people looking and taking the time to learn the areas and fishing it just a little bit.
Well, if you head up up the Caloosahatchee, there's a railroad trestle. It's up almost to the FP&L plant, kind of up by I-75 up there. That railroad trestle's just banging with snook right now. Big, big snook. Right. There's a bunch of them. Maverick lures.
Should be a bunch of tarpon up there, too, right now.
Tarpon, snook, all that. They've got the power plant with the warm water. They kind of mix in with the manatees. They go over to feed at the trestles. You got some major fish activity. Like I say, if you're going to pick a lure, I'd be throwing golden eyes and rattle traps. Those would be my two up there, because if the golden eye doesn't go deep enough, the rattle trap will. Golden eye's a little better there, but if you need something a little deeper, switch over to that rattle trap.
Yeah, it's an area I've never gotten to fish. I'd like to go down there and just to see it sometime and try it.
I was very lucky during my contracting days. I spent quite a bit of time down there and working that whole area. In the area around 41 with the little islands, you've got a bunch of trout there. They've got a party island in between the bridges. If you go just upriver from there, past the old 41, the business 41, I know the first one is Colonial. I don't know the name of the second one. But if you get up just north of there, you got some nice trout in the flats up there. Just drifting, going along, popping corks. It's not real deep. It's 2-3 feet of water at best. And you've got some nice trout activity. But coming back out of the Caloosahatchee, oh, the Cape Coral Bridge, talking to a guy yesterday, he was down there in Caloosahatchee. Cape Coral Bridge was doing real good. Can't find a lot of barnacles. A lot of people scratching and scraping, trying to get them sheephead up. But there is some nice sheepheads, a few black drum hanging out down there. Let's swing back up towards Matt Lachey.
Well, Matt Lachey, I haven't heard a whole lot about. Most of it's been a little bit further north on that south bar burnt store. And right around the corner there, what's that, Pineland?
Yeah, Pineland's, you know? Pineland's on the outside of thing, but you've got St. James City on the south end.
Right.
And then up there you got Boquilla.
What's straight across from that?
Two Pines.
There we go. Okay. All right. From Two Pines working its way up, I've been hearing a lot
more.
See
why
more
I don't like doing this myself? Because right. I can't ask the other guy, what was the name of that spot?
Yeah.
I would say to go blah, blah, blah.
I always flip-flop them for some reason, and I don't understand why I do that. But from Two Pines over to Boquilla, that whole stretch along that intercoastal has had some very, very good trout mixed in with some bonnet heads, especially on those deeper grass flats on both sides of the intercoastal. And then some sheep's head as you get up closer towards the shoreline and some of those sand holes.
Right out at the mouth of Two Pines, guy nailed into some 10-pound jacks.
Wow.
Right at the mouth of Two Pines, right where you make the cut through the bars. Real nice, just, it's jack, so it's a random occurrence.
But, well, sure.
You know, keep your eyes open. There's some big fish cruising that shoreline. Yeah. A lot of trout down in Burnt Store right now, from what I hear.
Yeah. Most of them are on that smaller size in that like 15 to 20 inch range, which is still in the slot. But I've heard of a couple really, really quality fish too last week. We had a couple guys in here, they got several fish that were 22 to 25 inches.
I've been hearing mostly over by Burnt Store 12 to 14 inches.
Okay.
I haven't been hearing the big ones. That's the first time I've heard of big ones there. Kind of like up at Pirate Harbor. Hearing a lot of 12, 13, yeah. 14-inch fish, but...
Yeah, the Pirate Harbor one, definitely hearing a lot more. Same way as in the Burnt Store Channel. Burnt Store Channel, it seems to be what I've heard is Burnt Store Channel up through just north of Pirate Harbor is infested with lots of little fish, you know.
Boy, if you're going to be infested, that's the way to go.
Absolutely. You know, have ultralight tackle, I mean...
Crappie rods.
Exactly. I mean, 2- and 4-pound test, mono, not braid.
I can't tie a 2-pound braid anymore. I can't see the stuff.
It's still not even that. You know, that's still, I mean, these guys put 10-pound braided line because it is only 2-pound test diameter on a reel that's made for 2-pound test. That's still, it's still 10-pound test. I mean, it's like these guys.
No, it's more like 16.
Yeah. I mean, these guys that go out and shoot a deer at 500 yards, does that make you a good hunter or just a really good shot? You know, it doesn't really make any sense to me. So going out with ultra light tackle and targeting with literally 2- and 4-pound test mono on a short little 5-foot or 4-foot rod. It's a blast, and I don't care if it's a 10-inch trout or a 20-inch trout, you're going to have a field day.
The only thing I can't stop, because, you know, you and I did a lot of that, I did a lot of it, and the only thing that you can't stop when you have that light rods is the jacks. I can handle the snook, the redfish, the trout, all them. You get a jack on, you've pretty much lost everything. There's just, you can't stop them. It's the only fish out there that, if you get a moderate size one, anything over, you know, 3 pounds or so, you're done. You know, you grab the line, break off, because he ain't stopping. You're out of line before he's done. Anyway, coming up on the east side, we've been around Pirate Harbor there a little bit. I know there's been a bunch of gazillion little tiny snook out in front, but those guys are going to move. This cold front, they're not going to be there anymore. You're going to look and see some bigger snook back up in the canals. A lot of trout going to be in those canals because with this cold weather, they're going to move in there. Those baby tarpon are going to be down deep this afternoon. As soon as that sun comes up, I think you're going to see a lot of rolling tarpon there in Pirate Harbor.
Oh, yeah. In Pirate Harbor, especially once you go through that back little island just as it opens up into the houses.
Get up into the Pitchfork and you're going to see a lot of fish there. A lot of boats, a lot of fish because it's going to be rough and it's going to be the only place to go.
Yeah.
So,
and don't be surprised if the pompano move up in there too because they seem to like, I mean, it's so abundant with all those different oyster beds on both sides of the channels going all the way inside that the pompano move in there, the flounder, sheep's head. I mean, you get a good variety. The problem is that most people target it in only one way. They go in there and start jigging or throwing a shrimp under a popping cork for trout. You know, it seems like the majority of people just try to target trout. They don't take some of their flounder jigs or they don't take a real soft, small bucktail or spoon and work it real slow across the bottom. And then also a lot of guys don't even troll through there when they should. The trolling in there can be absolutely amazing. You know, it's
well, let's. It's. I'm going to go against you on the trolling because the trolling is too short. There's not enough room unless you're doing those long, you know, the finger canals or the pitchfork or whatever they are, the prongs of the pitchfork there. You get a little bit of room, but it's tough trolling back there. I drift and cast or use my trolling motor. I'm more casting in there. But let's swing up into on the east side. By the time we do, between now and we do the next report, there's going to be squirrel fish in there hanging in the trees. You're going to have some bird fish from the branches. But the chance of getting any fish from Pirate Harbor to Alligator Creek over the next 2 days is going to be slim to none because there's going to be slim to no water.
Yeah.
The wind's going to be 30 miles an hour out of the north. Chances that there's 3 inches of water back there is, that's about, I'm going to call it, a 3-inch water cover on the east side.
If you're lucky.
There's going to be no fish there because there's going to be no water there. You're going to be fishing outside the bar. We're just going to call the east side of the harbor. Okay, give everybody a break. If they're back there in the holes, the only way you're going to find them is to walk to them.
Right.
If you don't have an airboat, you ain't going. So let's go up to Ponce.
Well, if it were me, exactly. I mean, if it were me, though, I mean, you got this weather moving in. If you're diehard and want to get out and truly learn it, these next 2 days, I don't care where you go, east side, west side, you need to go out and look, but be safe.
I'm going
to
say, you know, you're going to learn a little bit, but there's going to be so little water. I think you're going to be standing outside the bar looking at it through binoculars because I don't think there's going to be enough water. It might be ankle deep back there if you're lucky.
Right, but just to familiarize yourself with some of the sand holes and bumps and stuff like that.
Be a great thing to do, you know, from Mangrove Point Whorehouse around to the skating rink, work, come along that bar, and even looking at the bars, going down the bar, and investigating the bar would be good. But I don't even think there's going to be enough water where you could, like, sneak in behind the islands. But
no.
We've been talking a lot about learning those cuts, and this is the time of year when you're going to learn those cuts, because you're going to see them plain as day for the next couple of days. If you can get in there, like, say, put in at Ponce and just hug that shoreline around, it's going to be a little tricky getting from Mangrove Point over to Alligator Creek and back. But got to tell you, if you can get there and see it, it's going to be cool to look at because you will see every cut in the bar. It's going to be down 2-3 feet lower than normal.
Same way at the Mayaker Cutoff.
I'll never get two of my boats out there.
Yeah, they're sitting on the bottom.
Yeah, I got two boats that are flooding right now because the wind's still out of the west. So they're going to be, I'll be lucky if they don't hang on the seawall on their way back down. But I got to tell you, in a day or so, it's going to get exactly opposite. If you get your boat where you can get it out and get it over to the east side, it's going to be cool to see.
Absolutely.
Go up river, because going up river, you're going to learn that channel easy as you can go. We've come around Punta Gorda. There's a lot of jacks back in PGI, a lot of snappers, a lot of black drum. All through the canals, got a gazillion snook.
Yeah,
but
lots of juvenile tarpon, juvenile snook. The redfish have been there, but they're mostly small if you do get into them. The black drum, though, have been kind of cool because they've gone from the standard 50 and 60 pounders down to, you know, the 5 to 30 pounders, mixed varieties. Same way with some Atlantic croaker, some sheep's head, obviously. A lot of juvenile Goliath grouper, jew fish being caught in there, you know, in the 5 to 25 pound range.
Seem to leave PGI around 50 pounds.
Yeah.
Once they get up around 50 pounds, they're going to back out of the aisles. They're going to get out in the open, go out to the Alligator Creek Reef, Cape Hayes, move out towards the phosphate docks. And when they start approaching 100, then they're going to eventually move into the Gulf. But coming up river on 41, I still think that, you know, you're talking about going to the east side. Peace River is going to be a blast to look at. Because when you come from 41 going up to I-75, you're going to see that big bar coming off of the north end of 75, coming all the way down to the double green markers. That's going to be cool. You'll be able to cruise right up there. You're going to see where all the cuts are, because there's a lot of water in Peace River. I mean,
there's a whole lot of water.
We have a few shallow spots, but there is so many places with 10, 20 feet of water in the Peace River. It actually has spots that rival the harbor for as far as average depth.
Yeah, and the other cool thing about going up there on the Peace River from basically from the 41 bridge, mainly starting at the 75 bridge, is even though it's surrounded by deep water, it's really neat to look and travel along the shoreline and see how it drops off so quickly at some spots, and then 5 feet away, it's a very slow, gradual spot for, you know, 30 feet out, and then dumps hard again. You know, there's a lot of weird contours up there that I've noticed and that you've showed me over the years. It's just really, I mean, it's an interesting topography because of how different it is in 5 feet
and really,
span or 10 feet
really
span
cool
along the mangrove.
To watch the ecology change.
Yeah.
You know, because you start out with a straight out saltwater stuff, and then it goes into the brackish areas, and then eventually turns into the freshwater areas. And you can see the plants change as you go up the river. You know,
absolutely.
It's just
goes from mangroves to cypress trees and everything in between. It's really, really cool if you just watch it. Plus, the other thing is all the old frontier homes that used to be up in there. So you look back into the woods a little bit, and you'll see a stand of queen palms.
Yeah.
You know, or a stand of papaya trees. You know, there's some oddball stuff that you'll see back in there that were from somebody that lived there 50 years ago.
Yeah,
you know,
it's
kind of neat.
Pretty cool. I enjoy the river a lot. But actually getting back in, Port Charlotte canals, we've got fishing there, a lot of snappers, gazillion snook, black drum in the Port Charlotte canals is probably rivaling or better than the PGI canals. We're looking at a lot of trout. I'm going to be moving into the Sunrise Waterway, East Spring Lake. Just past the island on West Spring Lake, you're going to start seeing a lot of trout ladyfish up in there. If you go all the way up to the bridge on Midway in East Spring Lake, you're going to be into some real nice jacks up there. We've got some good snook fishing underneath that Midway Bridge. Really surprising how that came back on. Been a little slow the last couple of years, but this year it seems to really be turning on.
Even Edgewater Lake has turned on a little bit this year, too, for that. It's kind of weird. You know, usually it's known for juvenile tarpon and the occasional whatever else with a lot of catfish, but this year we've been hearing some better trout in there, some better snook, lots of bigger jacks. It's kind of nice. It's a real nice treat to see.
I had a dock on East Spring Lake to say my butt on many charters, because I could go in there, pull 3 to 10 snook off that dock. No, slot fish. Slot fishing up. I didn't get a lot of small ones, but you know, kind of a broken down dock, but that little dock saved my bacon on a few charters. But if you come back out and going around, if you could get into the creeks and Grassy Point, you'd be rewarded with some decent kind of lower slot redfish.
Mm-hmm.
Enough numbers, definitely get a keeper out of there, but you're going to be walking to get in there. There's
absolutely
not going to be any dirt for 200 yards of that after today. Going up Micah Cutoff,
My cutoff, there's been some redfish and some trout scattered mainly at the mouths. But with this water dumping out, you're going to have a lot of fish probably in that right at the entrances of it in the channel.
Yeah, if you get in there today, it's going to be a little rough getting from Alligator Bay over to my cutoff. You're going to go through some sloppy water. Be, not good, but boy, there's going to be a lot of water there, a lot of fish in there. Those first two creeks on the right are going to be just loaded with redfish. But as soon as this wind changes, if you're back there and that wind changes, you're there. You're walking home. You ain't getting out because that water's going to fall and fall fast. So I'm going to say stay out of the cutoff, go over to the Mica River. You got a little bit of Spanish in there. We're hearing tarpon, and haven't heard anything about cobia, but a lot of sheephead, some snook.
Right, and then moving up towards Eljo Bean, there's been a lot more consistent numbers of the sheep's head and the mangrove snapper and black drum. It's still been hit or miss from one day to the next, no matter what the tide is, but at least it's been a little bit more consistent.
How's the west side? I'm going to say for today, if you can get there with that west wind, it's going to be just crazy good.
Yeah.
You know, it's going to be very dangerous when that wind picks up, but today you're going to have a lot of water there on that west side. There's going to be a lot of redfish out through the mouths of the creeks. You're going to have trout back on the flats, but there again, if you're there when that wind switches, starts coming out north, it is going to be a miserable, miserable ride back.
Yeah, I think you have about two or three more hours before it's really time to start packing it up and head home.
Well, if you go around Turtle Bay, Bull Bay, the Cape Hayes Bar, behind the bar there at Cape Hayes, we got some nice trout right there in that pocket hole.
Yeah, been some pompano and bluefish up on top of the bar, too.
Yeah, going out towards Marker 5, it seems like the further you get towards 5, staying in about 4 or 5 feet of water right at the end of the bar, you can really ambush some nice schools of pompano and mackerel and stuff as they come around that point. And as that water gets lower and lower and lower, they got to swing more around. And that really is a great ambush spot there. Heard some guys really knocking them dead. And there's a couple pockets of big snappers there, 14-plus-inch mangrove snappers out there.
Right.
Turtle Bay, you're pretty much going to be able to get in and out of it most of the time. There's always usually way in and out, even on the super low tides, but it's going to be iffy Wednesday. Yeah. Tuesday and Wednesday is going to be real iffy getting in and out of Turtle Bay. There's water going down real low. It's going to be pushing all that water out of there. There's not going to be... I'm going to say I would work the mouth of Turtle Bay, but I wouldn't bother to go up inside.
No. Unless you stay right in that main channel and you're just going very, very slow and watching what you're doing.
I'm going to hold that same thing for Turtle or Bull Bay because you got two entrances right there in the front. You got the main entrance. You got that little side cut off the angle cut. But
you aren't getting in through that little angle cut, probably.
But what I'm thinking is, work the mouths, because getting up inside is going to be a booger, and there's going to be very little water. It's going to be rough. If you're not very, very familiar with the area, stay out of there for a while. Yeah. It'd be a great thing to do your Lewis and Clark, like you're saying, because in Bull Bay, it averages more water than the entrance to Turtle Bay. You've probably got, I'd say at least 3 foot most of the time. But, you're going to be able to get back in there and look around, especially exploring to the west side along the Peninsula Point in the Shack Cove back there and back by the houseboat. But it's going to be tough. You got to really watch and do not put the motor above an idle, because all of a sudden when you do go around, you will be hard aground. If you're just idling along, you're going to have no problems. You'll just bump and come back out.
Well, and if you're not familiar with that, Bull Bay, everyone who's not familiar with sand holes, sand holes are traditionally a spot that you see out there, and it'll be surrounded by some grass, or it'll be a super light patch, and it's usually a bowl. That's why they call it a hole. But really, really in Bull Bay predominantly, especially going from Bull Bay over into Turtle Bay through the backside, there's those, you call them doodle bug mounds, they're actually a hump, but they play an optical delusion on you out there because they actually look like a sand hole.
Looks like it should be deeper, and actually it's very, very shallow.
Yeah,
Trust me. And
they're hard. They're very firm, hard sand, and it will stop you in a heartbeat. So going at an idle speed, is a serious must through there to and learn where those humps and bumps are at.
There's a gazillion fish in the clam beds right now. Everything from sheephead to snook and big, nice fish back there in the clam beds. But, you know, it's going to be a little iffy getting there for the next few days. But coming around up in the intercoastal, Devilfish Key, Sandfly, I'm calling it intercoastal days for the next couple of days, working that deep water of the intercoastal right off the edge of the sandbar. I kind of like working that area between Devilfish and Sandfly because you do have that deep channel that goes through there. That should just load up with a bunch of fish because they're going to coming off the flats, not really wanting to go into the intercoastal. I think they'll drop into there because even on the low, low tides that we're going to be getting, I'm going to say you're still going to have 3 feet of water in that cut.
Oh, yeah. You know, I mean, and the trout are going to dump off the flats there from Whidden all the way down. All the snook, redfish, sheep's head, where there's no water, they're going to move into the edges of those deeper little spots. You know, so look, you know, look at those little deep channels, look at those deeper sand holes. Even just fishing the grass itself, just drifting out there right along the edge of the intercoastal in those grass flats, those fish will hang right along that perimeter there, and they're going to try to stay for as long as they can stand it, but they won't probably let it get less than 3 feet of water before they start to move around a lot more.
Yeah, it's going to be...
because it's going to be cold and bumpy.
Now, with the big front, you guys have been waiting. This is one of our longer ones for some reason. We're pushing a little over 40 minutes here. We usually try and keep them 10, 20 minutes long, but there's just been a lot to go over with this big front, all this stuff coming on. Today, got the west winds. It's going to be switching going to north. We're going to be dropping into the 30s, wind chills in the 20s. And the nice part about it is we're going to have a lot of water, and then as it starts going out, those fish should follow it off the flats. We're not looking for a big fish kill on this, even if it gets down at 27. We've got enough areas where the fish can get into, you know, they should be getting off the flats. We've had these chills. They're just coming back. But these are not the lazy, stupid fish. These are not the dumb ones that were here a few years ago. They're all dead. They grew up in a time when it never froze, so they got lazy. They never left the flats. These fish in the flats are supposed to, when the water goes down, get off of the flats, not hang out in the potholes.
Right. But, and this one's going to be slow enough, too, and not as drastic because we've had such a warm winter that the water temperature is still warm, so they're just going to follow that tide out and follow it back in. It's not going to be like super cold water where the fish are already slow and lethargic anyway.
And if you start seeing some snook laying around on the surface, they're not dead, they're sleeping. Believe me, you're going to see some snook when this water temperature gets down and we get that chill going across. Snook kind of go dormant a little bit, and you would be shocked at how many of those snook that will be floating around. Well, all of a sudden, as soon as that sun hits them in the afternoon, just spin right up and swim right off. So don't panic. This is not going to be a bad one. But anyway, Placida's our last stop on this tour.
Sheep's head, mangrove snapper, some jacks, bluefish, Spanish mackerel, kind of a mixed array of stuff.
A week ago, we would have been saying sharks and this and that and the next thing, but I think they're going to move out with this cold.
Definitely.
But Thursday, it's going to be 80 degrees. It's going to be better. It's going to be warmer. It's going to be great again. This chill is just what we need. Cleans up the water, reduces a lot of the bacteria. I don't believe we're going to see a big fish kill. We might. We're probably going to lose, you know, 500,000 pinfish and some sand bream, little tiny guys, and unfortunately, a bunch of little redfish and snook, the little baby stuff. But you won't. Nobody seems to care about that anyway. They only care when they're big floating around. But when you do see these big fish floating around, don't mess with them, and really look good because unless they're really contorted. Believe it or not, those snook are just kind of laying there, even though they're belly up or sideways up. Watch real close. You'll see the gills moving very, very slowly. And I think it's all going to be pretty good. I don't think we're going to see a drastic thing out of this.
I'll be surprised if we see any fish kill out of it.
Well, anyway.
Other than little hobber-dobbers.
Yeah, this is Fish and Frank and Robert. And an elongated, extended version of Radio Fishing. I don't know. I always want to go back to my old TV show name. You know, I keep, whenever I'm talking, I always start talking about the TV show I used to do.
Right.
But we're going to be getting our own TV show here, Robert, our own web show, probably before the end of this year. We're going to be working up on that. So not only do you have to listen to me and Robert, you're going to have to look at us, too. This just, yeah, I know. It just keeps getting worse. Well, you want to say... well, I guess it's good morning, so you don't want to say good night. What do you say when it's good morning?
good morning, have a good day, go through your tackle box today, come in here and buy some stuff that you need to restock on merchandise. Be careful going out on a boat.
Can you tell he runs the store? Come in here and buy some stuff.
No, just a good time to clean your tackle box.
I love you, Robert. Come in and buy some stuff, says Robert. And this is Fish and Frank saying, great idea, Robert. We'll see you on the next Radio Fishing, guys. Bye-bye.